4. Lift wasn't supposed to be able to touch Wendell. The Voidbringer kept saying things like he didn't have enough presence in this realm even with our bond, and you must be stuck partially in the cognitive. Gibberish, basically. Because she could touch him. That was very useful at times. Times like when you'd just jumped off a short cliff and needed something to hold on to. Wendell yelped in surprise as she leaped. Then he immediately shot down the side of the wall, moving faster than she fell. He was finally learning to pay attention. Lift grabbed a hold of him like a rope, one that she halfway held to as she fell, the vine sliding between her fingers. It wasn't much, but it did help slow her descent. She hit harder than would have been safe for most people. Fortunately, she was awesome. She extinguished the glow of her awesomeness, then dashed to a small alleyway. People crowded around behind her, praising various heralds and gods for the gift of the grain. Well, they could speak like that if they wanted, but they all seemed to know the grain hadn't come from a god, not directly, because it was snatched up quicker than a pretty whore in Bavland. In minutes, all that was left of an entire cartload of grain was a few husks blowing in the wind. Lift settled in the alleyway's mouth, inspecting her surroundings. It was like she'd dropped from noonday right into dusk. Long shadows were everywhere, and things smelled wet. The buildings were cut right into the stone. Doorways, windows, and everything bored out of the rock. They painted the walls these bright colors, often in columns to differentiate one building from another. People swarmed all about, chatting and stomping and coughing. This was the good kind of life. Lift liked being on the move, but she didn't like being alone. Solitary was different from alone. She stood up and started walking, hands in pockets, trying to look in all directions at once. This place was amazing.
"That was quite generous of you, mistress," Wendell said, growing along beside her. "Dumping that grain after hearing that the man who had it was a thief."
"That?" Lift said. "I just wanted something soft to land on if you were snoozing." The people she passed wore a variety of attire, mostly Azish patterns, or Tashiki Shikwas, but some were mercenaries, probably either Tukari or Emuli. Others wore rural clothing with a lighter coloring, probably from Alm or Desh. She liked those places. Few people had tried to kill her in Alm or Desh. Unfortunately, there wasn't much to steal there, unless you liked eating mush and the strange meat they put in everything. It came from some beast that lived on the mountain slopes, an ugly thing with dirty hair all over it. Lift thought they tasted disgusting, and she'd once tried to eat a roofing tile. Anyway, on this street there seemed to be far fewer Tashiki than there were foreigners. But what had they called this above? Immigrant quarter? Well, she probably wouldn't stick out here. She even passed a few reshi, though most of these were huddled near alleyway shanties, wearing little more than rags. That was an oddity about this place, for sure. It had shanties. She hadn't seen those since leaving Zorfix, which had them inside of old mines. Most places, if people tried to build homes out of shoddy material, well, it would all just get blown away in the first high storm and leave them sitting on the chamber pot, looking stupid with no walls. Here, the shanties were confined to smaller roadways, which stuck out like spokes from this larger one, connecting it to the next large road in line. Many of these were so packed with hanging blankets, people, and improvised houses that you couldn't see the opening on the other side. Oddly, though, it was all up on stilts. Even the most rickety of constructions was up 4 feet or so in the air. Lift stood at the mouth of one alleyway, hands in pockets, and looked down along the larger slot. As she'd noted earlier, each wall of the city was also a set of shops and homes cut right into the rock,
painted to separate them from neighbors. And for all of them, you had to step up 3 or 4 steps cut into the stone to get in.
"It's like the Pure Lake," she said. "Everything's up high, like nobody wants to touch the ground, 'cause it's got some kind of nasty cough."
"Wise," Wendell said. "Protection from the storms."
"The waters should still wash this place away," Lift said. "Well, they obviously didn't, or the place wouldn't be here."
She continued strolling down the road, passing lines of homes cut into the wall and strings of other homes smushed between them.
Those shanties looked inviting, warm, packed, full of life. She even saw the green, bobbing motes of lifespren floating along among them, something you usually only saw when there were lots of plants. Unfortunately, she knew from experience that sometimes, no matter how inviting a place looked, it wouldn't welcome a foreigner urchin.
"Well," Wendell said, crawling along the wall next to her head, leaving a trail of vines behind him. "You have gotten us here and, remarkably, avoided incarceration. What now?"
"Food," Lift said, her stomach grumbling.
"You just ate."
"Yeah. Used up all the energy getting away from the starving guards, though. I'm hungrier than when I started."
"Oh, blessed mother," he said in exasperation. "Why didn't you simply wait in line, then?"
"Wouldn't have gotten any food that way."
"It doesn't matter. Since you burned all the food into Stormlight, then jumped off a wall."
"But I got to eat pancakes."
They wove around a group of Tashiki women carrying baskets on their arms, yammering about Leoforan handicrafts. Two unconsciously put hands over their baskets and gripped the handles tight as Lift passed. "I can't believe this," Wendell said. "I cannot believe this is my existence. I was a gardener, respected. Now everywhere I go, people look at us as if we're going to pick their pockets."
"Nothing in their pockets," Lift said, looking over her shoulder. "I don't think Shiquas even have pockets. Those baskets, though."
"Did you know we were considering bonding this nice cobbler man instead of you? A very kindly man who took care of children. I could have lived quietly, helping him, making shoes. I could have done an entire display of shoes."
"And the danger that is coming?" Lift said. "From the West? If there really is a war?"
"Shoes are important to war," Wendell said, spitting out a splatter of vines on the wall about him. She wasn't sure what that was supposed to mean. "You think Radiants are going to fight barefooted? We could have made them shoes, that nice old cobbler and me. Wonderful shoes."
"Sounds boring," he groaned.
"You are going to slam me into people, aren't you? I'm going to be a weapon."
"What nonsense are you talking about, Voidbringer?"
"I suppose I need to get you to say the words, don't I? That's my job? Oh, this is miserable."
He often said things like this. You probably had to be messed up in the brain to be a Voidbringer, so she didn't hold it against him. Instead, she dug in her pocket and brought out a little book. She held it up, flipping through the pages.
"What's that?" Wendell said.
"I pinched it from that guard post," she said. "Thought I might be able to sell it or something."
"Let me see that," Wendell said.
He grew down the side of the wall, then up around her leg, twisted around her body, and finally along her arm onto the book. It tickled, the way his mane vine shot out little creepers that stuck to her skin to keep it in place. On the page, he spread out other little vines, completely growing over the book and between its pages. Lift leaned back against the wall of the slot as he worked. She didn't feel like she was in a city. She felt like she was in a tunnel that led to one. Sure, the sky was open and bright overhead, but this street felt so isolated. Usually in a city you could see ripples of buildings, towering off away from you. You could hear shouts from several streets over. Even clogged with people, more people than seemed reasonable, this street felt isolated. A strange little Kremlin crawled up the wall beside her. Smaller than most, it was black, with a thin carapace and a strip of fuzzy brown on its back that seemed spongy. Kremlings were strange in Tashik, and they only got stranger the farther west you went. Close to the mountains, some of the Kremlings could even fly.
Yes, Wendell said. Mistress, this book is likely worthless. It's only a logbook of times the guards have been on duty. The captain, for example, records when she leaves each day. 10 on the dot by the wall clock, replaced by the night watch captain. 1 visit to the Grand Indicium each week for detailed debriefing of weekly events. She's fastidious, but I doubt anyone will be interested in buying her logbook.
Surely someone will want it. It's a book.
Lift. Books have value based on what is in them.
I know. Pages.
I mean, what's on the pages?
Ink?
I mean, what the ink says.
She scratched her head.
You really should have listened to those writing coaches in Aesir.
So, no trading this for food? Her stomach growled, attracting more hunger, Spren.
Not likely.
Stupid book. And stupid people. She grumbled and tossed the book over her shoulder. It hit a woman carrying a basket of yarn, unfortunately. She yelped.
You!
A voice shouted. Lift winced. A man in a guard's uniform was pointing at her through the crowd.
Did you just assault that woman? The guard shouted at her.
Barely, Lift shouted back. The guard came stalking toward her.
Run?
Wendell asked. Run. She ducked into an alley, prompting further shouts from the guard, who came barreling in after her.